Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, handbrakes on, seatbelts off, sit back and relax if you can because you're listening to episode 2 of Spin the Rally Pod. Yes, we've settled on a name that Colin Clark doesn't have to write down to remember, and you can now get in touch at the Rally Pod. I'm Lisa O'Sullivan, a rally fan. My job is to herd the cats and keep this podcast to a manageable download size. I'm in England, logging in from Scotland. We've got the rally brain and historical expertise of former team boss George Donaldson. Hi, George.
Good evening, Lisa. I'm not quite sure I feel that historical.
That's why we've got you here, all that knowledge, soaking up the ambience and the pre-WRC action in Mexico. We've got our Dirtfish rally experts, David Evans and the aforementioned Colin Clark. Hi, guys, and I'm going to start with the big question. How's the weather in wonderful Guanajuato?
It's shocking, Lise. It's, you know, for me, this is some of the worst weather of the season. I would say it's probably 30 degrees and sunny. And just take me back to Sweden, back to the mountains, back to the snow. And Colin's looking appalled.
I am absolutely appalled, Lise. I absolutely love this weather. My sandals have been broken out for the first time this year. Shorts are on. Got a lovely Dirtfish top on as well. David's struggling in his jeans and his Marks & Spencer sweater. It's a strange thing.
Just let me ask this question. What on earth are you doing back in those sandals? I thought they died at the end of last season. The sandals and the toes, frankly, are far too close to me right now.
Yeah, but Trevor, the marketing director, has approved the sandals. So, David...
Let's take your opinion.
Maybe the sandals should go into self-isolation.
I would like to get... Firstly, Lise, what's your take on men in sandals? And secondly, George, what do you think?
I'm thinking
You're thinking no, Lisa. Good.
Good, Lisa.
I can tell you that I've shared hotel rooms and rented houses with Colin, and I can tell you quite honestly, those shoes have quite often been evicted to the, sandals, jangles, whatever he might be wearing, have been evicted to the verandas and outside the doors in the hope that they would disappear overnight, be carried off by some mutant creature that's sensed them from the other side of the world and come to take them away because it must be alive and delicious.
But strangely, those mutant creatures have come and taken one look at them and just left them there, haven't they? But I think we will tweet a picture of said sandals. In fact, I'll take the picture right now.
I think that's noxious.
Job of probably keeping people at least a meter away for Colin Clark. So we have to get onto the far more serious topic of the fact that we are in a situation now where people are giving each other plenty of room because of the spread of the coronavirus, COVID-19. And how is that affecting things out in Mexico?
Well, David, I think maybe you're best placed to answer that one because, you know, you've been talking to some of our major players this morning about this exact subject, and you were, a lot of us are sitting in the service park monitoring what's going on in other parts of the world, but you've got the news. You spoke to Ogier earlier, and Ogier's been quite outspoken today about his thoughts on it.
He has. You know, he feels that we shouldn't be here, we shouldn't be running the event. He feels conflicted and quite compromised, and, you know, he's not afraid of the virus, but he is afraid of the fact that we could be stranded here. You know, we don't know exactly. We saw the news from Donald Trump yesterday that he's not allowing European flights into America. You know, all the travel restrictions are changing almost by the minute and by the hour here. And that's what Sebastian was saying this morning. You know, he has a family back home in Germany, and he wants to know that he can get home to them. That's his primary concern. And we can all understand that, completely understand that. The sort of caveat to that is that I spoke to Patrick Subaville earlier.
Who is Patrick?
He's the rally director here in Mexico. And you do feel in some ways that, you know, this is a European, perhaps a European East, Far Eastern disease that we're sort of bringing out here. Now, we don't know the exact number of cases here. We don't know how much testing they've done. But Patrick said they've got 12 cases in Mexico. So, you know, it's not a massive issue here. And we're coming over here and kind of complaining, or not complaining, but we're stressing and worrying about something that's not really a huge deal in this part of the world.
Well, it's not a huge deal yet, David, but I think in some ways what you said there is slightly contradictory, because you made it very clear that Ogier is not concerned from a safety point of view. Ogier is concerned from a lockdown point of view. But really, there's no doubt, is there? Okay, by the time you guys are back home and listening to this podcast, we'll probably be well in to Rally Mexico. But there's no real doubt that Rally Mexico is going to run. You know, even if Ogier did, you know, pack up his bags, jump in the helicopter and fly home tonight, well, the rally, you think, almost certainly will still run.
I think it has to, because, you know, I don't really see how the teams get. I mean, this is much more really a question for George, you know, because we spoke to so many of the logistics people today, and they're kind of all looking to Sunday. You know, that's the day that everybody wants to know that they can, or Sunday, Monday, they can get the logistics away, probably not to Argentina now. We're pretty sure that Argentina is going to be cancelled, but they can get the logistics away and they can get all of their people on planes and get them home. Increasingly, it looks more and more difficult to get them home through America. So suddenly, you know, you're looking at Mexico, perhaps more in South America. Those, it's not an easy thing to turn all of these logistics around. And the teams have got different people working on these situations and scenarios as they unfold. But primarily, the teams now are very much into rally focus. You know, they've been through shakedown this morning, and it's business as usual, as much as when the crews are out on the stages. But in the service park, all everybody's talking about is coronavirus and should we be here and, you know, will this event go ahead? The event started from a technical perspective. The event is up and running now. Shakedown's going and, you know, the ceremonial start is just a couple of hours away. So as far as we can see, it's up and it's running and it's happening. But, I mean, George, just what's your feeling? You know, what if you were sporting director at Subaru in the service park right now, what would you be up to?
Well, I tend to be a little bit more fatalistic about these things. Basically, it's just a bad flu, isn't it? I've read a few reports of people that have got it and they just say it's a bad flu. Obviously, it's quite virulent, and if you're ill with something else or elderly, it is an issue.
Not so much, George,
than it affects you guys.
Not George from the sort of medical perspective. I did mean more from the sporting. Yeah. We're not referring to Dr. George here.
From the sporting point of view. Yeah. from the sporting point of view, I would be in the same mode as everyone else. Rally mode. Let's get on with it. Honestly speaking, we're going to pack everything up. I would have employed a company called White Knight, my good friend Tony Vinson, and he'll sort everything out for me. Logistically, my equipment will get to the next event without any doubt, and it'll be seamless.
Most recently, we saw this happen when an Icelandic volcano got a little bit agitated and cancelled the flights over Europe. Now, the rally was actually in Europe at that point, and there were a lot of people in the WRC who spent a lot of time on coaches driving back across Europe to get back from an event because of that, that unfortunate explosion in Iceland. It's a very different question, though, when you're on a totally different continent.
Well, it is, Lise. And that's the concern. As we've made clear, the concern around the service park isn't so much for people's safety. You know, we know that there are very, very few cases here in Mexico. The concern is this ongoing, the ongoing travel restrictions that are being imposed. But I think that's a very kind of, it's a very pertinent question for Mexico, if you like. But I think we have to look beyond Mexico because, you know, we're talking now, our governments are talking now about banning events for 2 months. You know, we're hearing that events in April, even into early May, are being cancelled. You know, if we look at this and, you know, realistically, George, we could be looking at a 3 or 4, maybe 5 month complete shutdown on all sporting events around the world. What would that mean for rallying, George? Never mind just the World Rally Championship, but the British Championship, you know, all the national championships around the world. What does it mean for them? Can they survive that?
I mean, Colin, it's actually awful for all the events, for all the teams, for all the people that make their living out of the sport, for the fans not to be able to follow it. People, you know, organise holidays around it. It is absolutely terrible. If it'll be 5 months, well, I mean, we just have to wait and see what's going to happen. Ultimately, governments and travel restrictions are not going to keep people from home. Ultimately, people are going to get home. It might take, you know, if you end up, the worst case scenario for anybody travelling right now is that you end up somewhere where you know, let's say you go back through the States, let's say, you know, Seb Ogier's heading home and he goes back through the States and he's got to change his flight, can't go direct to Germany now, so he's got to change his flight to go via UK and he has to spend a night in a hotel in New York. And it ends up that somebody there's got COVID-19 virus and he gets quarantined there for 2 weeks. You know, that's the sort of awful thing that's going to happen. Other than that, ultimately, yeah, it's going to hurt some teams financially. It's, you know, some of these smaller, the commercial teams, the guys running, you know, WRC2 cars, the R5s, you know, those are small commercial operations. You know, they've all invested heavily in projects and they get cut. They, you know, they can't stand the money loss. It can be very catastrophic.
That's one of the points in service this morning, George, is, you know, you're talking to some of these teams, some of the smaller teams, and, you know, they've got mercenaries in. They hire these guys for weeks at a time. And some of these boys... You know,
mercenaries? Is that the right word?
I think so, isn't it?
I'm just wondering what kind of job they're going to do.
Okay. It's the part of the world that we're in, Cole. I watched that thing that you... I was watching that programme that you were telling me to watch on the film.
Narcos,
good Lord. That's
Patron, tranquilo, patron, tranquilo.
So, okay, contractors. Sorry, at least we can get rid of that last bit, can't we?
We can get...
Right, so we're going with contractors. That's fine. So some of these contractors were in the service park earlier this morning and, you know, they have a very uncertain future because, you know, they earn their money on a week-to-week basis from working on these events. And suddenly, if you talk in their call for 4 or 5 months, these boys are not going to pay their mortgage for 4 or 5 months.
And it applies to so many people, and not just around the service park. And it may seem like a, you know, a very parochial kind of point of view to take, but there are so many people who work on that basis. You know, they get paid from the events that they do, from media people to suppliers to, you know, teams themselves. And you know, it isn't just, it's the social impact of all of this that I think is a little bit frightening. You know, there will be disruption. There'll be massive disruption. People will really struggle through the next 3 or 4 or 5 months, whatever it is. I think it'll be a different looking sport, David, when we come back. No, I think it will. I think it will, because I think we'll have lost people. I think we'll have lost people. I think people won't, as in, not dead. I don't mean that. I mean, you know, people who will have
companies
to go and find
out. Companies are going to go bankrupt.
Well, people will go bankrupt. People will no longer be in this sport. People will have to go and find different jobs. It will look, the sport will look different when we return. Maybe from an internal point of view. Maybe not from an external point of view, but from an internal point of view, it'll look different.
I see your point now, but, you know, absolutely from an external point of view, we'll pick up where we left off. And you know it, but it is going to be a very, very tough time for a lot of people. And you've said it exactly right there. You know, it's beyond the mechanics and the contractors. There's photographers, there's people like everything that you've said there is exactly right. The catering companies, but it's not just rallying. You know, it's across motorsport, and it's not just in WRC. You know, we've seen West Cork's cancelled, and there are rallies all around the world that are being cancelled right now, and.
David, I'm personally very worried about all those footballers. They only earn maybe £100,000-£150,000 a week, and they're not going to play anymore. What are they going to do?
Well, I tell you what, we're going to move on. We are going to move on from that point. And if you keep yourself checking up on the Dirtfish website, we'll keep you up to date with all the news as we get it on what is actually happening with upcoming events, so you can plan the rest of your rally year. But we are here to talk about Rally Mexico, the wonderful Rally Mexico, Guanajuato. I mean, it's such an iconic place to start an event. Those tunnels, the whole spectacle of Mexico. Colin, how's it looking? How are the stages looking? And well, we talked a lot about the weather last time. What's the weather going to be like?
Yeah, at least, listen, your Guanajuato...
Not great, the weather, Lise.
Oh.
Well, do you know what?
I need to point out at this point to anyone who's never seen Beckham, as we like to call David, he's very blonde, he's very pale-skinned, he doesn't agree with the sun.
That's a very good point. Thank you. Very well made.
And it's 31 degrees and he wears Marks and Spencer's woolen jumpers. He's a strange creature, our David Evans. But at least, listen, he is slightly. You know, you're quite right. Guanajuato, Rally Mexico, it's such a colourful event, probably one of the most colourful events on the calendar. But everyone looks forward to coming here because we've had, obviously, Monte Carlo, cold event. We've had Sweden, normally a cold event. And then we come here and we get our first dose of sunshine and warmth and colour and real excitement. But here's the thing. You were laughing and joking about the weather. It may yet play quite a big part in proceedings this weekend. There's a bit of a change over the last day or two in the forecast. You know, initially, it was looking like blue skies, 31, 32 degrees, maybe a touch warmer out in the countryside and up in the hills. They're now forecasting the potential right through the weekend for thunderstorms. Now, you know, thunderstorms here will be very localised. But, George, you've seen a lot of Rally Mexico in the past. If we get localised thunderstorms, George, so we're not talking torrential rain, we're talking localised thunderstorms, what effect's that going to have, George?
Well, it's not going to have the effect that you might think. Obviously, as you say, localised, if it's on a, you know, a massive 40-kilometre stage or 30-kilometre stage, it's probably only going to be wet for half of it, you know, unlikely to be across the whole stage. So certainly on the first day, it's bound to help Elfyn Evans. It's bound to help Thierry Neuville and Sebastian Ogier.
Does it get muddy out here?
I was going to say, though, just so long as the weather isn't one of the, as you say, Colin, if it's very localised, it could be raining at the beginning of the stage and not the end. Someone could go through in dry conditions and someone else gets all the rain.
That's it. It's almost impossible to make any form of reliable forecasting for thunderstorms. Sometimes they happen, sometimes they don't.
I spoke to Elfyn about half an hour ago and said exactly this about the weather, and he said, you know, in all honesty, it will have to rain all night long to have any kind of serious impact. You know, we see these huge downpours come, and within, you know, there's so much temperature in the ground and there's so much wind at high altitude that it can dry in no time.
I'm going to make I'm going to make a remarkably good point for me. Because quite often I miss these things. But the issue is not when it rains here so much, because it dries remarkably quickly. I said that's not the issue. The issue is the damage that can be done to the roads. You get washaways. So it is quite possible that where in the recce there is nothing to be noted, that after a 20-minute, half-hour downpour, it drags dirt and rubble off the hills, and it can wash away. So potentially, we might not be talking about a surface change, but it's quite possible that following a thunderstorm, in places, in very, very local places, the inside, the gutters may be washed away, there may be bigger rocks exposed, there could even be gullies that appear across the road. David, that is a real possibility. Don't look at me that way. It is possible.
If you say so. I still think it'll dry quickly.
Oh, come on, David. That's a fair point. But by the same token, the drivers are going to deal with it. The rally drivers, they're fabulous.
Yeah, they will. They will completely. And, you know, as Elfyn said, it would have to rain. But equally, we have seen it and we've heard it rain all night here. You know, we've all been woken up with enormous thunderclaps in the night, haven't we, Cole?
Yeah, that's the dodgy chilies that you keep eating, David.
No, but I think you're...
That just sounded so Morecambe and Wise.
And there's nothing worse than somebody laughing at their own joke, is there, Lise? Really?
Well, it's just the fact that you were both waking each other up with thunderclaps.
Moving on.
All good.
What I have to say, you know, one of the fabulous, and it's quite tricky this because the podcast could be out and it could be old news by the time it comes out, but Shakedown today. If we look at the times that was set, Elfyn obviously was quickest on, I think it was his fourth run. He was first into the stage. So there was an opportunity for Elfyn to put a benchmark down and to show that he can deal with the cleaning and what have you. So his time of 3:50.7 was quicker than Neuville by 3 seconds, quicker than Ogier, quicker than Tanak by a lot. And you have to go all the way down to Sunninen, who was, six cars later on the road than him. So immediately, Elfyn's had that opportunity to show And for me, you know, he's done just that. He may get no more glory this weekend. It could be the end, you know, if he's sacrificed tomorrow on first on the road all through Friday. And, you know, where it is very sandy, he will struggle. But for me, that's so encouraging, isn't it? That he's had this opportunity and he's taken it. And he's shown the world that he can be quickest. And sorry, Colly, you were about to start. I just wanted to add, it's a good size stage. You know, it's 5.5K, isn't it? It's not, you know, a really short one, and it's quite representative.
Yeah, very representative, but I don't really know that it tells us that much about what can be done this weekend. But at least you're going back to Guanajuato and the start of the rally. Your Rally Mexico, it's a strange event, really, because there isn't a massive rally culture in Mexico. Their national championship isn't particularly strong. There's not a huge rally community, but it is always one of the very best rallies of the year. You know, we've started here before with, I think, 20 cars, 23 cars. There's a decent entry this year. I think it's up towards 40 cars. But no one ever talks in Mexico about how few cars there are, because there is always, always masses of drama on this event. It always gives us something to talk about. You know, you think back to the Corona. Seeing as we're talking about Corona, the Corona bottle with Thierry Neuville, you think back to like Tanak, you think back to Sebastian Loeb back in the day coming into service and going down the mountain on three wheels. You know, the gate issue. Remember there was the gate that was barred for Sebastian Ogier a few years ago. There is always drama here in Mexico, and you forget really by the time the first car gets into the first stage of the rally just how few cars there are, because it is such a colourful, entertaining, a nearly always dramatic event. George, what makes it? Why do you think that is the case with Mexico? Is there something particular about the stages here?
Yes, so the engines have got a little bit less power than normal. So there's in many ways, the margins for the drivers are more marginal. And they always, no matter what they say, they always try and make up for the lack of power by pushing a little bit harder. The nature of the roads, a lot of these roads have been manufactured for the rally, where they're tight and twisty and narrow, and narrow, the roads have been improved, but they've ended up with very high sides in them. So you're basically driving in a little toboggan run almost of a track. Not that it keeps you in it, but there's lots of edges of the road to bounce you out. There's rocks come off and they're in the road for the next car. That's as big a hazard as potentially, you know, the wash away concept, Colin. Yeah. And so there's always catch outs for drivers. It's a tricky rally. It's hot. The drivers are stressed with the heat. It is rough. It is quite rough. It's smoother than it's getting smoother as an event. Classic character of an event. Lovely fast stages. Even the slow bits have character, and they're nice to drive through. Lots of crests and switchbacks, and you know, it really commands a great deal of discipline in driving. Yeah, it's going to reward the man like Sebastian Ogier. But goodness gracious, does young Elfin not seem to be coming a little bit of a Mr. Ogier clone himself?
Well,
wonderful.
Well, if he is an Ogier clone, then he's got a chance this weekend, because again, if you're reading on Dirtfish the articles that David has been writing recently, David, you wrote a great article about you know, how Ogier tamed Rally Mexico from being first on the road.
No, that was my colleague Jack Cousins, and it was a superb article.
Apologies to Jack. Yeah, it really was. But you know, it can be done and it can be tamed. But George, I think you're right. I think what you talked about there very eloquently were the hazards and the challenges of Rally Mexico. And you know, every rally is a challenge. Every rally has its particular, you know, challenges that need to be addressed and need to be overcome if you want to win. I think the difference with Mexico is that it offers quite a number of different challenges, and not every driver has the armory that's required to deal with those challenges, and they can be, I think the problem is that there, you know, they are situations where if you don't deal with them, to use one of your words, George, it can very quickly be catastrophic. You know, it's not just it's not just punctures, it's not just, you know, the odd little ding or a wheel just out of line. It's catastrophic. It's rally ending very, very quickly indeed.
Absolutely, Colin. It really is like that. And it's the disciplined mind that will win this rally. That's why we've seen Sebastian Ogier do such an incredible job here in the past, and Sebastian Loeb prior to that. You know, both very, very disciplined drivers who will we will just drive methodically, understand what they're doing, set the pace, and go with it.
But here's another question then for David first off. What we know about this event in terms of previous winners, well, what do we know? We know that no one has won this event driving a Toyota. No one has won this event driving a Hyundai. It has always been a Ford or a Citroen. Does that tell us something about the cars, or does it tell us something about the event? And does it tell us anything about what we might expect this weekend? Or is David, is it just a very strange anomaly? Can we take anything from it, or is it just a strange anomaly?
Well, I think it's a slightly strange anomaly because, you know, you look at Volkswagen won it for years and they're not here now.
So did Citroen. They're not here either.
Exactly. You know, in fairness to Ford, they do an awful lot of work in their climatic chamber and the engine is there's a huge amount of work from Ford Performance, I think, in Michigan, isn't it? But, you know, that's not to say that the other teams aren't doing exactly the same work. You know, M Sport has a huge base of knowledge. They're probably they are the only team that's been here year in, year out. And since 2004, you know, they've accumulated a huge amount of data as to what, you know, particular weather formats will do to the car and that kind of thing. So, yeah, you know, they use all of that knowledge. I suspect, would it be a struggle, do you think, to see an M Sport winner here this weekend?
Well, I think it'd be a big struggle. They have a chance, clearly, because they've got decent road positions, both Lappi and Sunweb. And we can't, much as we'd like to see Greensmith doing well, a result for Greensmith is to get to the finish, to be totally honest with you. And if he gets to the finish, he'll be in the top six or seven.
And that, you know, for me, that has to be Gus's objective. You know, totally, just come here, take the experience, and don't try and be a hero. Because, you know, we've seen time after time, And I actually flew down last night with Marco Martin, not in Marco's private plane. Clearly, he doesn't have a private plane. We happen to be on the same flight out of Dallas. And I was asking Marco, you know, about when he won in 2004. And he said, you know, it's the sort of event that if you just stay there and just stay calm and just stay in the middle of the road, the result can come to you. And we've seen it so many times.
And George, you were involved with Subaru on this event a number of times. You know, what was your instructions to your drivers ahead of this event?
I was actually just on the edge of the WRC team by the time we came to Mexico for the first time. So I was actually working directly with Subaru already by then. So I was a sort of spectator from the WRC 2 or PWRC as it was back then. You do. I mean, it was quite obvious from the moment we came to Mexico and went out and looked at some of the stages. We knew how tough it was going to be. And I mean, I looked after all the Subaru customer teams at that point. And my advice to them was, guys, this is a great opportunity. We've got a lovely, strong car with a couple of little weak points. Let's make sure you don't clip any corners and damage the steering. The steering was a little bit weak on the cars. Everything else was bulletproof. You just had to make sure if you were going to hit something, you went straight over it. Car would survive that, we could have won everything effectively. Just, you know, the guy that was going to win it was going to be the guy that just kept his nose clean and didn't destroy the car.
You know, and to, I suppose, reiterate that point, we've seen our five cars getting really good results here in the past. Benito Guerra was sixth last year, which is quite an astonishing achievement, really. It is a particular rally that does punish very hard and that does require a really particular approach. So, I don't know.
I've got a big question for you to actually tell us about, and I want George's thoughts on this. Hyundai have got their aerodynamic bag of tricks out for us in Mexico. What do they look like? What have they done?
Yeah, David, you've had a good look around that car. Can you remember, and you know, in exact detail, can you describe the new aerodynamic updates?
I can. On the radio, not
I can,
using your hands.
But I'm not going to. I'm going to leave it to David because he's distracted. He never stops working, this boy. David, go on, tell us about these aerodynamic updates then.
They've got some new plastic bits on the front and a bit more plastic at the back. And you're a git, Colin. You had a much better look around it than I. Basically, they've added these winglets on the top of the front fenders. If we call them.
No, Wheel Archers.
We work for an American company. They're Fenders.
No, they're not in America. Oh, Trevor, the marketing director, who's sitting in the background, not, he's nodding his head. I thought a Fender was a bumper, no?
Colin, don't start another argument.
It's a Wheel Arch. No, George, I give it. Yeah, you're right, George. I'm not going to start an argument. It is apparently in America, the Fenders. It's just a Wheel Arch.
So we've got the bit on top there that is going to add, that's going to give more downforce at the front. And then at the rear, we've got an extra bit of, on the end plate, the end winglet at the end at the rear, we've got some more vertical. Yeah. So it's going to capture more, that's more perhaps for sort of lateral downforce. Lateral? Downforce, yeah, as you're sideways, it's gathering the air.
Yeah.
Is that right, George? George would be a good one because, yeah. George, you were the first with Subaru to add those
basically,
fins.
Yeah, basically, we're at very high altitude here, so the value of aero is considerably less. Yeah. I mean, it's actually, you know, in the tens and 15 and 20%, maybe even 25% less effective than normal.
Simply because there's not the volume of air, isn't it, George?
There's not the volume of it. 9,000 feet, you've lost one, at least, was it, we'd be down to, but must be down to about 910 millibars. So yeah,
that's what I was calculating here.
10% of our air pressure we've lost. So the effectiveness of it here is much less. Psychologically, it's massive for the driver.
George. So here's that. This is something I've never heard talked about before. You know, every time we come to Mexico, we hear about the fact that the engines are compromised and the engine power is compromised. No one has talked, as far as I'm aware, of the fact that downforce is compromised by air pressure. Is that what you're telling us?
Absolutely. That just tells you how little effect it really has in some ways on a rally car. The biggest effect that the aero will have on the car is the cooling package in the engine. And how you can reduce weight and increase its effectiveness. A lot of the aero on the car at the front is all to do with getting air through the engine intercooler and through the water radiator and through the oil coolers and the gearbox oil cooler and the diff oil cooler. A lot of it's to do with that. But the aero, it makes a huge difference. I always remember the story of Stig Blomqvist in Finland, having been there with the Sierra Cosworth, the two-wheel drive Sierra Cosworth. And they'd finished all their testing, and they were on one of the nice big stages with lots of jumps. And he said to the mechanics, just take the cocktail tray off the back of this car and let's try a run without it. And so the guys took it off and away he went down the stage. And he got 3 kilometres and turned around and came back ashen-faced, having nearly somersaulted the car over the first jump. So, yeah, whilst those big spoilers, I think they were... I seem to recall a figure of around about, that was on the Group A car, so that had the extra lip on it. Somebody said to me that was worth 100 kilograms of downforce at, I think it was something like 150 kph. That's quite a significant amount of weight, and downforce effectively. Anyway, Stig gave himself one massive fright. So yeah, let's not belittle the effect of the aero. Yes, it does have a massive effect, but it will be reduced.
Lise, just a quick point of order here. I am trying to type. I'm trying to do a story, and Colin's looking at me and shouting at me. Should I stop typing?
No, keep going. Everybody knows
sounds like a newsroom, yeah.
You're the journalist in rallying, so keep going. The sound effects. I've got just a question to add on to, because the time is ticking on. I know that you want to talk about Ken Block, Colin Clark.
Yeah.
I have noticed, I love Ken. I think he's highly entertaining. He really does add something to the rally, but there's some really negative press going around about him. What's the problem?
What is their problem? I have got absolutely no idea, Lisa. Ken Block is a special character. And do you know what? Ken Block has never, ever proclaimed that he is the best driver in the world. He knows exactly what he is. But in terms of rally cars, in terms of popularity, in terms of doing things that interest and excite and get people to look at our sport, no one in the past 10 years has done more than Ken Block. He's introduced our sport to a new audience in certain areas that no one else has managed to do. And you know, it's snide. I hate hearing these ridiculous comments about Block. It is pathetic. It is jealousy, David. You're absolutely right. Block is, You know, he's won rallies in America. He came very close to winning the American championship. He's won in New Zealand, and he's a very, very competent driver. He is not and never will be and will never claim to be on the same level as our top WRC drivers, but he is very special. Let me tell you, I was at the test on Monday, and Block was there in George. It was a throwback to your days, George, that wonderful Cosworth Escort. And it did look stunning. It sounded stunning. And you know what? You could not move around Block's service area. You know, the people that have walked miles, that have come in miles, just to see Ken Block. And that will be the same tonight in Wanuatu. It'll be the same on the stages during the course of the weekend. Ken Block is an entertainer, and he's someone that our sport should embrace, because he brings a different perspective and he brings a different audience and he brings potential, you know, in terms of new audience, which we've been struggling to do as a sport for many, many years. For generations, we have struggled
Colin,
to work
you
out.
Colin, sorry to interrupt, Colin, but you know, Ken Block was a rally fan as a 10-year-old in America when it was unbelievably difficult to follow rally in America. You know, it was pretty well before the dawn of the internet. So, you know, the guy would be having to get, you know, weeks old motoring newses or autosports to get his news. He's an absolute fan through and through. He's just a rally man, die hard.
He is.
Lovely bloke.
Long
and
before
filled
dirt
with
fish.
Respect and love for our sport. The man's just an absolute, he's a rally god. There you are.
Hey, and you kind of look to someone like, you know, he was great friends with Colin McRae. And the stories that Ken has of the time that they shared together, you know. You know, I would take Colin McRae's opinion over whether somebody is somebody to associate yourself with in our sport. And Colin was dead right. You know, Kent is just a totally down to earth, just proper rally fan. And having sat with him on a couple of occasions, he's not a bad driver, trust me.
Yeah, he's a great driver, Lee. So, yeah, we're going to enjoy having Ken around this weekend, and we'll see him a few more times this year. He's taking his, what do they call it, Hoonigan Tour or Gymkhana Tour?
The Cosy Tour,
the Cosy World Tour. Is that what they call it? Okay, they're taking it around the world, and it'll be a delight to watch him, Lee. So, yeah, I, for one, certainly am really, really pleased to see him back here. He is a big, smiling, you know, very imposing character that brings an awful lot of something different to the WRC.
Which is what Dirtfish is now doing. That was a nice link there, wasn't it? Did you see how you set me up and then I hit the ball out of the park? Dirtfish bringing you all your rally news, dirtfish.com. Colin, some people don't know about the extent of what Dirtfish is doing and what is Dirtfish all about. They think it's just a rally school in the States. I think you can fill us in a little bit more on what Dirtfish's ambitions are in the world of rallying.
Well, yes, I could, but what I've just done, I keep forgetting David
See,
and I
gave
are
gave a really good link there, Colin, didn't
you? Did, yeah, it's fantastic, because as I've already mentioned, I've not mentioned quite where we are. We're David and I are together, but we're in Trevor, the marketing director's room. And it's a room that befits a marketing director, I'd have to say. It's very comfortable and very large. And he's here, so what we'll do is we'll have a chat with Trevor. Trevor, the marketing director, as I like to call him. Lisa just saying there, Trev, that, you know, what we talked about with Ken Block is really perhaps what we're trying to do with Dirtfish these days. And you know, a lot of people are asking, Trev, what's Dirtfish all about? It's a rally school in America, isn't it? Well, that was how it started. But just take us through your vision for Dirtfish and you know what it is we are trying to do.
Yeah, so basically we saw an opportunity and a gap in the rally market in the media space. So we took that and we made Dirtfish into a new type of business that's focused on rally media, rally content, rally news. And our hope is to not only bring WRC to America, but also America to WRC more.
Trev, that's really exciting because, you know, it's such a great sport. We know it's a great sport, but for some reason, you know, the American motorsport public haven't yet cottoned on to just how exciting rallying is. And in some ways, as you say, that's what we hope to do, to show them just how wonderfully exciting a sport it is.
Absolutely. And that's our goal, is to bring the WRC exposure to America, or the American exposure to WRC.
And to do that, you've taken on board some of the very best people in WRC.
And Colin.
Yeah, David said, and Colin. Yeah, we've really looked at the entire market. We looked at where everything was, where things were lacking, and then we hired the people to fill that. Really, we hired David and Colin, and we've hired a new videographer also who will help do that.
It's exciting times, Trev, really exciting times ahead, because the project keeps evolving, and there are opportunities that arise that, you know, what I like about the first 2-3 months with Dirtfish is you're not afraid to actually go and have a look at doing things. And you know, when you see an opportunity presented by the fans that the fans are asking about, you go and have a go and see if you can deliver it for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And those opportunities have presented themselves multiple times since Monte Carlo. And the opportunities that have come up that we can't talk about yet are massive. And it's been amazing so far.
It has been. And Trev, it's been amazing working with you so far. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Thank you very much. At least, George, I know there's a little loving going on. At least, George, any questions for Trev, the marketing director? Or has he said enough? He's looking a little embarrassed now.
Well, I know that Dirtfish is based in Washington State across there, near Seattle. And I've done a WRC rally there. I was part of a team, the Toyota team, in 1986. We were there with a Group B car with three drivers. And it was an incredible event. It's a shame that it faltered a little bit in 1987. I wasn't there for that one, and then it disappeared sadly. It was a great rally, and there was a good culture there, but it wasn't widespread, which confuses me because I think that rally, open spaces, out in the environment, doing your own thing, that's a very, very American thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is. And George, but you're absolutely right. What I've only done one event in the States, and that was the Oregon Trail Rally. And what blew me away was just the enthusiasm and the passion of the people that ran the rally, that were involved in the rally. You know, there is massive, within certain, unfortunately, small pockets, there is massive enthusiasm. And if it's a great untapped market, and we know how important the States are to just about every single manufacturer. And, you know, if we can do our little bit here at Dirtfish, that's me, David, it's yourself, George, it's Lisa, it's everyone else that's associated with Dirtfish. If we can do our little bit to perhaps just, you know, inform the American market and maybe just make them take a wee look. Block is doing that clearly. Take a little look at rallying and just increase the rallying profile in the States. Then, you know, we're doing a good job, guys, if we can do that.
That definitely sounds about right. I've just got, we're down to our last few minutes, really, of this edition of Spin, the Rally Pod. So that is the name. We don't have to write it down on a big piece of paper anymore, Colin. But, George, I was wondering, with this state, I'm going to go back to where we started this with the coronavirus and the fact that we're seeing unprecedented amounts of sporting events cancelled across the world. I mentioned the Icelandic volcano. That kind of happened after the event, so it made travel back from the rally difficult. But have we ever actually seen any championships in the rally side of things cancelled or absolutely shut down because of external events?
If I go back to my very, very youngest years, back to when I was just 7 or 8 years old, 1966, the REC rally was cancelled because of foot and mouth disease. And that gave birth to the most incredible television event, which has become Rallycross. It had become Rallycross.
I didn't realise that.
It was the most incredible. I remember seeing that. It's a very hazy memory.
Wow.
Seeing this because it was all over whatever it would have been. I forget what the BBC, was it Grandstand, was the
World
Saturday afternoon TV
World
programme.
Sport?
World of Sport.
Oh, that was
ITV. ITV. Right. It was BBC. BBC Grandstand. Raymond Baxter, who was an ex-World War II fighter pilot who did all sorts of technical programmes, and including Formula One and rally. And he commented on this, him and probably Murray Walker, commented on that first rallycross, which was a huge event at Lyddon Hill.
So Lyddon Hill, George?
And it was the most spectacular. Lyddon Hill, it's still there.
Wow.
Still used for rallycross. Most amazing place. And it was an incredible event. And that was my first introduction to rally cars. And I was in totally encompassed with it. But my family didn't really follow motorsport. And we lived in a small town in Scotland, and rally was not around us. Although, obviously, by the time I got to 16 and 17, the flavour was still there for it. As soon as I could, I found it again and dove headlong into the sport. But, you know, out of that came rallycross. What's going to come out of this? One thing that's for sure, the person that's leading the championship at the end of this event may well be leading the championship for half the year. You know, goodness gracious.
Yeah, and commentating on the esports side of things.
Oh, no, don't get onto that, Lise. Don't get onto that. I'm sorry. I get esports for
about
youngsters.
Getting into the environment, Colin.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, but I don't, you know, people saying, well, there's an opportunity for esports and people to sit and watch it. Nothing in the world could make me sit in front of my television and watch kids.
So wrong.
No, see, that you could sit and watch a video game.
I did. I watched, not last year, the year before, I watched John Armstrong become world champion. Don't dare knock it, Colin.
You were there.
It was exactly the same.
You were there.
I agreed completely. And then I won. But no, I just watching it on TV, honestly, it does get you. I know that there's a whole load of preliminary rounds to get to, but just for that short bit, you know, I was the same as you talking about rallycross again. I didn't want to like rallycross. Went to my first race at Lyddon Hill, waiting to hate it, and absolutely loved it. That 4-minute final was incredible. Okay, that was right in front of you. But still, I think, don't knock it till you've tried it, Cole.
Well, apparently so, but yeah. No, I can't imagine myself sitting in front of a television on a Friday night.
Colin, can I tell you about video games? I often wondered about all these video games that people play, and I think it's Grand Theft Auto. I was stuck out in an oil rig in the North Sea waiting for permits to work, and the guy I was working with was a video game nut, and he started to play this Grand Theft Auto. And I stood watching him for a minute, and then I sat watching him for hours. It's an absolute scream. It's an absolute scream. It's the most ridiculous game I've ever seen. I wish I could do it, but I don't like those little controllers. I need a steering wheel or something. But my goodness me, don't knock it. I watched it for hours, and I was just looking at the screen on somebody playing for it. So, yeah. Well done, John Armstrong, world champion.
One thing I can promise,
if we don't have any events, we won't be talking about the specs of computer-generated cars. We won't be talking about the potential road conditions for computer-generated circuits.
No, we won't.
We will be talking all things rallying, Colin, if we can, the next few months, in the next episode.
100%. Can I answer that, David? Can I answer that? You know, go ahead. You're the senior correspondent. Go ahead.
All I was going to say is that, know your place, Colin. All I was going to say is that we do have a whole world. You know, we talked about this at breakfast this morning and said, you know, if things do quieten down in the world of rallying, don't worry, people. We have got so much stuff to talk about.
We really do. And you know, that will be podcasts. It'll be written pieces. It'll be videos. There may be an enforced break for competitive rallying, but there won't be an enforced break for an informative rallying news and stories, because, you know, David, myself, the whole of the Dirtfish team will be absolutely on top of it. We know how passionate rally fans are and how much of a thirst they've got for any kind of rally content, and we will absolutely be there every week with something new, something a bit different, quite often a bit of a look back, maybe a different view on things that have happened in the past. But there's plenty for us to talk about. There'll be plenty for us to work with over the coming months, even if there isn't any sporting action taking place. And we will all look forward to, clearly, things getting back to normal. But in the meantime, you know, dirtfish.com will be the place to go for your dose of rallying.
And we'll be back with the next edition of Spin the Rally Pod in around 2 weeks' time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.